What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
It's episode 87.
Welcome to heaven.
And this episode is not going to feel like
that. No, it's not going
to feel like that. It's a heavy
one. It's a heavy one, but we talk about real stuff that needs to be talked about. I talk about the New Zealand massacre that happened where 50 Muslims were killed. And we talk about each victim and give them a name.
And yes, and I talk about ISIS, aka ISIL, and it's shitty. And enjoy that.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Sick. We're rolling. Keep this in. Sick. Who are you? I love the word sick. This is Shereen. And this is episode 87
of
Butts. Seven. Welcome to heaven. What? I'm not 11.
I'm yawn. Is
this
87?
This is 87, I believe. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. It's confusing, though, because we don't number the bonus episodes. Sometimes I think we're not at 87.
Episode 87, Ethnically Ambiguous.
Yeah, your notes look really good.
Thank you so much. I just scribbled on a piece of paper and was like, no, no.
A lot has happened since the last episode. Before we even
party time has happened.
I mean, I was really vulnerable, I guess, on the last episode, and so I really appreciate all the nice messages.
So vulny.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
you weren't that bad.
I almost texted you, being like, delete it all on Sunday night,
and it's like, and the episode will abruptly end.
Yeah.
Now.
But I really do appreciate all the nice emails and messages that we got. And some people have messaged me on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. So I really do appreciate that.
They're like, sorry.
That's the whole point.
I would eat your box.
You're like, what? Wow. I'm just joking. I don't know if any of that came out.
No one said that.
I will eat you out to make you happy.
I'm really bad at receiving. I don't know if I even if I wanted to. But anyway, I do appreciate it. And if we have time at the end, I want to read some of the nice things you guys said.
They're like, we'll eat you out. And we're Anna, like, oh my God.
Talking about eating me out. I don't like it. No one said that. And
they're all like, we'll eat you out. Can you imagine multiple people? Wowzers!
Yeah, they're all on the same. Like, that was the main takeaway from my.
We'll all eat you out.
But I really do appreciate it. I'm not really doing, this always happens around my birthday where I'm not really in the best mental state, and it's like seasonal depression, but like birthday depression for me, it always happens. I don't know why. And I think especially because I'm turning 29 and I'm like almost done with my 20s. I think I'm especially down. I know. And
I guess I'll let you out on your 29th birthday if you ask.
Anna, stop talking about it.
I don't know what I'm doing right now.
But I do really appreciate you guys. I don't know, being supportive, and I'm okay. I just, I'm just like a little down, but just, this is what happens. It's fine. And I'm just being critical of myself in a way that's not necessary. But in the end of the episode, if there's time, stay tuned. Maybe we'll read some emails because you guys are the best.
And all the emails say, we'll eat you out.
Oh my God.
There's nothing more fun than watching Shireen want to murder me.
No. I just don't know what to respond to that.
Be like, yeah, guys, like, really loved all that, like, cunnilingus, like, really positive cunnilingus messages you guys were sending. I just think of, like, the posy cunny vibes is like, did you send a text? Because yeah. We heard it.
Sorry, my friend is like, when are you going to get to Highland Park? And I said 8.
You're like, after I'm done getting this cunnilingus from our fans. Guys, is that weird? Have you guys consented to this cunnilingus, or are we forcing you to give it to us?
I don't want to talk about cunnilingus anymore.
I like that I've moved it to cunnilingus.
Ethnically cunnilingus.
Ethnically cunnilingusly ambiguous.
Oh my God.
What do you guys think of the word cunt? Just
I love the
about
word
it.
Cunt.
You know, for the longest time, I didn't know what see you next Tuesday meant. I thought you were just describing someone who's just an idiot.
And wait, I don't know what you're talking about.
See you next starts with an N. Tuesday, T. So cunt. So when someone doesn't want to say cunt, they say, she's a real see you next Tuesday.
I never heard that before.
I would always hear the phrase see you next Tuesday and didn't realize that was people being like, they're a cunt. I thought it just meant that they just sucked. I was like, oh, she's a real see you next Tuesday.
Oh.
Or like, you know, some people are like, she's a real
cunt.
Cunt. And it just occurred to me the other day. I was like, see you next Thursday. C-U-N-T. Cunt.
I like the word cunt. I don't know if it's very feminist of me to like it because it's like a derogatory way to like talk about the female body, but I just like how harsh it sounds. And
yeah.
The Brits say it so casually. I just like the way they say it.
Yeah, we're going to get some tweets about this. You really can't say that.
It's just such a harsh, like, fun word
to
say.
If you tweet at me that I can't say cunt, in real life, you're probably a cunt.
You're not wrong.
You got cunty vibes.
What else happened this week? I mean, honestly, I've been, since we last recorded, we've gotten a lot more information about the massacre in New Zealand, and I've been, trying to understand how I feel about it all. And also, there's just so much information every day that has happened. Even today, on Thursday, we're recording this, there were 5 Birmingham mosques in England that were attacked.
Okay.
And they were attacked with a sledgehammer in one night. That news came out today. And so it's like in response to what happened in New Zealand. So I think like it's not over, and it was never over, but it's kind of scary. The world right now is really scary when the leader of America is like credited in inspiring that attack. That's even scarier. So I'm gonna be talking about that today, but we don't have to get started right away. Do you want to talk about other
stuff?
No,
I mean, I'm agreeing, like, yes, we don't, but no, I don't know. I want to really quickly drag Wells Fargo over the coals. These motherfuckers, guys, stop banking with Wells Fargo. That's all I'm gonna say. They're so evil. Big banks are so evil. Go join a credit union.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, banks are bad. I know, right?
Yes, banks are bad. Big banks are evil. Join a credit union. Fuck Wells Fargo. Fuck the Banks of the Americas. Fuck the other ones that names I can't remember off the top of my head. Bank
Chase? Or
sure, fuck Chase. Fuck them all.
I don't know.
They're so shitty.
But we also need them, which I don't like. No. I don't like that we have to depend on them.
We can use credit unions just fine. We should be using credit unions because they're more...
Why don't we?
Because we're all fucking brainwashed, man. Man, the system, man. The system.
Get down with the system.
I'm going to close my account with Wells Fargo. I'm done, man. Man, I'm done. Like, this is what I'm saying, man. Like, they're trying to control us. Like, they're feeding our brains.
This is how I am now. This is who I am now. Like, I won't apologize for being so, like, woke. For being so, like, aware that the system's trying to bring us down.
Wait, can we talk about who was here yesterday?
I don't think so.
You were here yesterday.
I was here yesterday.
And you're here today. And you're here every... And I appreciate that. That was me trying to save what I just said. We cut that out.
Well, I can say that some of you have sent us messages saying the Ron Burgundy podcast ads on our show are too aggressive. Guys, we have no control over what ads they play on our show, okay? Also, I worked on the Ron Burgundy podcast show. If you listen long enough, you'll hear my name in the credits. So that's probably why they're advertising on our show is because
is your name in the credits?
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, produced by... Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they say my name.
Well, that's pretty
or
sweet.
Or Ron says my name.
That's sweet, man.
Man, they fucking better all that work I put in. I'm crazy. But anyway, that's not the point. I'm just saying, yeah, they're advertising because I spent hours working on that shit. So sorry a crazy white man is screaming at you in our ads. But there's really nothing you could do about it because, you know what, it helps promote my work. So you should be happy that I'm doing well. And also, everyone knows you can skip over the ads. Not that I'm saying you should, but you can, so don't be like that.
I didn't know you could.
No, well, you know, I can't have this conversation with you.
I don't listen to podcasts.
Yeah. I'll tell you why. You don't listen to podcasts. So here we are.
Here we are. Yeah.
Banks are bad. Ron Burgundy okay for Anna's career.
Yeah, I mean, he's just playing a character. So I think maybe the listener, I mean, the email maybe was a little confused. I don't think she realized like he was playing a character. She was just like, do you know that an angry white guy is shouting in this ad? But it's the Anchorman character, man. It's he means well, and Will Ferrell's is a really nice, lovely human.
Who's that?
I mean, Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry about that.
I do want to say though that Ace Biscuits today, his outfit, and you know, no, usually he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, but today he's wearing a black turtleneck because he's dressed as Mugatu from Zoolander. And if you guys don't know who that is a character in Zoolander. Google who Mugatu is in Zoolander.
But it's played by Will Ferrell, right?
Who's Will Ferrell?
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, so
it is.
Oh, okay. Just that's my whole bit. I don't know who that is. But yeah, go look at that character and you can imagine what Ace is dressed like.
He's really cute.
He's wearing a black turtleneck that
but
I got
you,
on sale.
Did you mean to dress him up like that? Or did just like you thought of it after he wore
it? I got the turtleneck weird outfit sweater on sale in Seattle at one of those like artisan dog shops that they have up there. There's like 45 fucking hundred of them on one strip. They're all artisan dog shops. And I don't know why I said that. They're artisan dog shops, Shireen. Artisan. artisan. And it was on sale, and I was like, oh, that looks like a nice sweater. And then I put it on him, and I was like, this is straight up turtleneck. And it's really funny. It's just funny when you look at him, and my friend goes, he looks like Mugatu. And then we all laughed about it forever, and now I just call him Mugatu.
Cute.
When he's wearing it. I don't call him that when he's not wearing it.
Of course not.
One would say it's confusing because he's a puppy, but honestly, he doesn't really respond much.
No.
He responds to like, God damn it!
No!
Why did you eat that?
I'm
just kidding. He responds to his name. He's actually quite a good boy.
He's a very good boy.
He responds to Ace. He knows how to shake. He knows how to sit down. And he knows how to lay down.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is a mess. Now, I really want to get him to... If you guys know how to train a dog to stay... I know I could just watch a YouTube video, but I'm lazy right now.
Are you really asking people to
tweet
at you?
Yeah, tell me how to train my dog to stay put because it's not working. I have tried. I've Googled it. I haven't watched YouTube videos yet, but I have Googled how to make my dog stay.
Well, he's also, I mean, it takes a while to train a dog.
He learned shake within 5 minutes. No, I'm just joking. I know. But I want to get him started so he knows to stop following me everywhere. He's like stage 5 clinger sometimes.
He's a puppy, Anna.
I know. He's so obsessed with me.
Should we get into
it? Stage 5 clinger.
Oh, my God.
Conolingus. I'm saying that my Brody Stevens voice. Shout out to Brody Stevens. Great comic. R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Conolingus.
Should we get into it?
Sure.
Okay.
You go first. We already agreed to that. That's the funny part.
What?
I said you go first, but we already like made an agreement that you were going to go first. Yeah. I was just being funny.
Okay. As
Shireen
I said.
Just tried to stab me under the table.
She missed.
She, you?
Talk in third person now.
When you're
murdering you talk in third person.
I want to be disassociated.
Nice.
I want to talk about the massacre. And I want, there's going to be a big portion of this where I'm just going to tell you about each victim. And I also want to talk
about New Zealand massacre at the mosque.
Yes, the New Zealand massacre in the mosque in Christchurch. And I also want to talk about the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who is the true definition of what a leader is. I hope I'm saying her name right. If I'm not, I'm sure you'll correct me anyway. But it's Jacinda Ardern. She's leading this nation and it's been 50 confirmed dead at the two mosques. New Zealand on Thursday, today, they declared a ban on military-style weapons and rifles, and that includes assault rifles, high-capacity magazines, and military-like semi-automatic rifles. And since the attacks in Christchurch, she's become the face and voice of New Zealand to the world, which is... I mean, honestly, I'm so glad she exists, and I'm so glad that she is the face of this country, because she's using her platform to denounce the hateful acts. She immediately called this person a terrorist. She immediately, literally days after, assault rifles are banned. Like, we've had so many mass shootings in this country, and they get a slap on the wrist, if anything. We hear about the innocent boy that how could he get a gun? And, like, it's just, this is how what leadership looks like, in my opinion. I want to get into a little bit about her before I get into some other heavy stuff, but she's New Zealand's youngest leader in decades. She was, she's the third woman to become New Zealand's prime minister, and she's 39. She's the youngest New Zealand leader since the 1850s.
Wasn't she also pregnant when she got it?
Oh, I don't know.
Pretty sure. Maybe that's someone else.
Yeah, apparently, yes. She has the most meteoric rise to power of any New Zealand prime minister, and 3 months to even being sworn in, she was not even a leader of her party. And she's a member of the Labour Party. She graduated from university and with a bachelor's in communication studies and public relations, and she worked in Britain's cabinet and home offices. And something that she's been doing recently with the shooting and the massacre, she's refusing to give the shooter notoriety, which is something that the U.S. and the U.S. media does a lot. When you hear about a mass shooting, you will most often learn the name of the shooter. You will learn his background, how he became this way, or the speculation of how this innocent boy, usually a white innocent boy, could become an evil person. But she has promised her nation's parliament that she will not permit notoriety of a man who killed and wounded those at Christchurch. And his name has been stricken from all of her future conversations. And I want to play a clip from a press conference she did where she is talking about that.
But we in New Zealand will give him nothing, not even his name. He sought many things from his act of terror, but one was notoriety. And that is why you will never hear me mention his name. He is a terrorist. He is a criminal. He is an extremist. But he will, when I speak, be nameless.
What she's saying is really important, because Trump, even imagining Trump referencing a white shooter as a terrorist or an extremist, he would never do that. And what's really jarring and terrifying is that the shooter reference that Trump was like an inspiration to this terrible act.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so disgusting to be led by a nation where that is the case. So I really do admire her a lot, Jacinda Ardern. And she immediately after it happened, she promised tougher gun laws, and she went through with it. And she said that it demonstrated, the attack on March 15th demonstrated the weakness of New Zealand's gun laws. And right after that, she vowed to end the easy availability of weapons, especially those that were used in the attack. The guns used in this attack, she said, had the power to shoot continuously. The times for the easy availability of these weapons must end, and today they will. And she said that in an announcement today, actually. And as a result, an amnesty and buyback program will be in place for New Zealand citizens. However, these are very tightly regulated exemptions will be offered for hunters and farmers. And I think what's important to realize is that assault rifles and weapons that shoot continuously, they're not made for hunting. They're made for killing people in combat. Like, there is no use for them in functional society unless you are in war. And even if you are in war, it's a very extreme fucking circumstance. A civilian should not have that weapon. And I'm really glad that there's one fucking leader in the world that recognizes that. Oh, yeah. And then this article also mentions that as she began her new role as prime minister, she was also about to give birth. And she became the first elected head of state to take maternity leave, which is really notable. And then her and her partner, Clark Gayford, who's a television host, they went to New York with their baby for a UN meeting. And she's just so humble. And she said, there's a quote that she says, "I don't ever want to give the impression that I'm some kind of Wonder Woman, or that woman should be expected to do everything, because I am. I'm not doing everything." So that's a little bit about her and a little bit about why she's really been an amazing leader. Because I just the fact that she even mentioned him immediately as a terrorist, a criminal, an extremist, the fact that she's not even mentioning his name, like, when that's what he's going after, that's just really amazing. And there are so many videos of her. She's like, out of respect for the Muslim community, she's been wearing a hijab when she goes to like mourn the victims. She's like hugging those who have lost people. She opened her speech in New Zealand by saying "Assalamu alaikum," which is like the Arabic greeting for hello and like peace be upon you. She said that there was going to be a moment of silence today, with followed by the call to prayer with the Adhan, which is like a very holy Muslim thing. And it's going to be like on the anniversary of that, which is Friday, which is the most holy day for Muslims. And I just really appreciate her like unflinching response to these shootings. She's been steadfast in how she feels. Because her reaction is firm, and she has this commitment to inclusivity and equality that so many leaders need to have. But so, for example, after a conversation with Donald Trump, Ardern was asked in a press conference what Trump would do to help the situation, given that, unlike her, he did not view right-wing terrorism as a growing problem. And she said that she thinks that he should express sympathy and love for all Muslim communities.
But he hates them.
Yeah. And some of the the family members of the victims were saying that the prime minister, when she came wearing her scarf, was a big deal for us. And she attended the funerals, and she has just, I don't know, she's been a human being, which is more than we can say from our leader. I don't even like to call him that. He's a fucking monster, but she's great. And now I want to give, actually no, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back talking more about this awful situation.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
And we're back. Okay, so I want to give some attention to Khaled Beydoun, who is a professor at the University of Arkansas. He's been getting a lot of attention recently because he's been, he was one of the first, the night of the shooting, to talk about the victims. And he started this thing called, it was 49 lives at the time, and now it's become 50 lives because 50 people have been killed. But he's been immortalizing and remembering every victim and giving them a story, their story, to remember them by, rather than even learn the shooter's name. And I'm happy to know that I don't even know the shooter's name. And the night of the shooting, he tweeted, "I don't know the terrorist's name, nor do I care to know it. I've been keen on knowing the names and remembering the stories and celebrating the lives of the victims. Please join me." And so there's a whole thread on Twitter. I highly encourage you follow this man. He's so good and smart, and he is just fighting the good fight.
Yeah, we retweet him often, yeah. So you've probably seen him around.
Yeah. He's just fighting the good fight. He's on an amazing side of history. And even Sean King was saying, like, or this is more about the prime minister, but he said for the rest of American history, quote, "thoughts and prayers will look more hollow than they ever have thanks to the bold actions of Jacinda Ardern and the government of New Zealand." And they, like, retweet each other. And I just think it's, like, cool to have these, like, I don't know, Twitter activists out there because they're inspiring. And he tweets stuff like how you should reject the phrase moderate Muslim because it implies that Islam is inherently violent, and the qualifier moderate is needed to soften it, because moderate is never, if only seldom ever, used to qualify other religions. So this phrase is inherently Islamophobic. And he tweets really important things, like, just to remember. Like, he says, Arab and Muslim are not the same. Don't confuse or conflate the two. Arab is an ethnic or political identity, while Muslim is a religious identity. And the vast majority of global Muslim population is not Arab. And he was saying that New Zealand has a very diverse Muslim population. It's comprised of Arabs and Afghans, Maoris and Asians, Africans of various nationalities, and even white converts. And humanizing these 50 lives that are taken, he says, it highlights the diversity of the over 40,000 Muslims that call New Zealand home. And what's really upsetting is that the majority, or at least a good part of these people that were killed, they were either refugees or they were immigrants to New Zealand, just seeking another home. And I want to read aloud the names of the people who have died, because they deserve at least that much. So here's what we know about them. Etta Alian, he played for New Zealand soccer or football. He was 33. He was a technology entrepreneur and a goalkeeper and a new father. He played for New Zealand's national football team. According to the New Zealand Association, it was confirmed his death. Or I guess it's futsal in New Zealand, which is the version of five each side soccer played indoors. He was born in Kuwait, and he studied computer science at the University of Canterbury. He was the chief executive and co-founder of LWA Solutions, which was a mobile startup. And he was known in the sports world and in the tech community in Christchurch. And his wife, Farah, and him had a young daughter, Aya, whose photos are everywhere on his Facebook page. And in one, she's wearing a bib that says, "My dad rocks." Mm-hmm. The next victim is Musad Ibrahim. He was 3 years old, and he's the youngest person confirmed to have been killed in the attacks. He was at El Noor Mosque and became separated from his brother and father when the shooting began. He was a Muslim-born Kiwi who was full of energy, love, and happiness, his family said in a statement. He is remembered in our community as a young boy who emanated nothing but the representation of God's love, peace, and mercy. Quote, "knowing that New Zealand and the whole world stands behind our boy reassures us that violence and racism are unwelcome in our world." The next victim is Sayed Milne. He was 14. He had just turned 14, and his father talked about him through tears. He was one of two Kashmir high school students killed in the attack, and he was an avid soccer player, and was known as very friendly and warm, and what more can you say? He was a good person, and his life was taken. The next person is Lilik Abdul Hamid. He was 57, originally from Indonesia, had been an aircraft maintenance engineer for 16 years, and the company's chief executive of Air New Zealand talked about him in a statement. He said that he first got to know the team even earlier when he worked with our aircraft engineers in a previous role overseas. The friendships he made at the time led him to apply for the role and make the move to Christchurch. And he is survived by his wife and two children. Arib Ahmed, he is 27, was the employee of PricewaterhouseCoopers. A statement, Pakistan's foreign ministry said that he was originally from that country in the largest city, Karachi. And he was loved and respected, a member of the PricewaterhouseCoopers community. That's what the company released in a statement. And they said that his smile, warmth, dedication, and respect and humor will be deeply missed. Tariq Omar is another New Zealand football player, confirmed dead. He was 24. And he coached for several Christchurch United football clubs and junior teams. And the club's academy director called him a beautiful human being with a tremendous heart and love for coaching. Shahid Suhail was 35, from Pakistan. He was an engineer who worked for a resin manufacturer in Christchurch. And he had a wife and two young daughters. And his wife said that his daughters were his life. Saeed Jahandad Ali was 34 and originally from Lahore, Pakistan. He worked at a software company and had a wife and three children. And according to a fundraising page created by the company he worked for, the statement called him a kind and gentle man. And they said that he deeply touched the lives of his friends, colleagues, and wider technology community through his knowledge and skills. Haroon Mahmood was 40 years old, and he worked in banking in Pakistan before moving to New Zealand. And he taught in a private school for international students and had been a tutor at Lincoln University in Christchurch. He had a wife and two children. Faraj Ahsan, he was 30, originally from India, and he lived for 10 years in New Zealand, where he worked as an electrical engineer. He left a wife and two children and a brother that spoke about him in a statement. Again, this is just indicating just how many people were killed that were immigrants and people that were just trying to make a better life somewhere. Immigrants are the most important, amazing part of society, here or anywhere else. Mahbub Khokhar is a 65-year-old Indian engineer. He was on his first trip to New Zealand. He was visiting his son. He had moved there from India 8 years ago. His wife said that they had been in the country for 2 months, and he was at the mosque the day before they had planned to leave. Muhammad Haziq Modtar Tarmizi was a 17-year-old from Malaysia. He was among those that were killed, and his father was also wounded in the attack but survived, 17 years old. Asif Vora was among five Indian nationals whose deaths were confirmed by the Indian High Commission in New Zealand. He was 58, and he had a son, and he and his son were both killed in El Noor Mosque. His son was named Ramiz Vora, who was 28, and he had become a father just days before his death. Ansi Ali Bava, who was 25, she was another one of the Indian nationals. She had moved to New Zealand with her husband in 2018, and she had just completed a master's degree in agribusiness management. And her husband said that she had so many dreams. Ozair Khadir was 25 and dreamed of being a commercial pilot like his older brother, who's originally from India and moved to New Zealand in recent years and was set to make that a reality. Haj Daoud El-Nebi was 71 and he arrived in New Zealand from Afghanistan about 30 years ago and was a central figure in Christchurch's small Afghan community. He was a leader who welcomed everyone. And he was running 10 minutes late for Friday prayers along with his 8-year-old daughter when they came upon the police, and the younger Mr. Nebi's hands trembled as he held up his mobile phone to show a picture of his father with his daughter. Or his son was running 10 minutes late and they showed a picture of him, and so basically they missed their father by 10 minutes and they knew their father was inside, and his death came hours later. Al-Madani was 65, immigrated to New Zealand from the UAE in 1998. and he considered New Zealand home and never thought something like this would ever happen here, his daughter said. Husna Ahmed was 47, and she led a number of women and children to safety after the shooting in El Noor Mosque happened, her husband said, who was in a wheelchair. She said that she was killed when she returned to the mosque to check on him, and said that she was busy saving lives, forgetting about herself. This is what Islam has taught me, to forgive the gunman and believe that the good would eventually come from the killing. Her husband went on to say that what he did was a wrong thing, but I would tell him that inside him, he has great potential to be a generous person, a kind person, to be a person who would save people, save humanity, rather than destroy them. I hope and I pray for him that he would be a great savior one day. I don't have any grudge. Like, that's how, I don't know how that's possible. Naeem Rashid, in the gunman's self-made video of the killings he posted to Facebook, this man can be seen trying to tackle him as he began firing in the mosque. He was in his 40s. Talia Naeem was 21, and she's the eldest of the previous victim's three children. The second is 18, and the youngest is 5, and her father is very proud of her. Amjad Hamid was 57 and a cardiologist who had spent the last few years of his life working in rural communities in the mountainous area of Taranaki on New Zealand's North Island. And he continued to live in Christchurch with his wife and family. Kamil Darwish was 38 and he arrived at his brother's home in Christchurch the eve of the attack. And he didn't want to miss Friday prayers. Linda Armstrong was 64 and a third generation New Zealander who grew up in New Zealand and converted to Islam in her 50s. She had a huge heart and what little she had, she was more than happy to share with the Muslim community. Muhammad Imran Khan was 47 and was originally from India and killed at the Linwood Mosque, and he had owned a restaurant and two other Christchurch businesses. Muhammad Musad Muhammad Hussein was 54 and killed at Linwood Mosque as well. Hamza Mustafa was 16. He called his mother when the shooting began, and he said, "Mom, there's someone come into the mosque and he's shooting us." She said, "Hamza, Hamza," and I could hear his voice, and then it was quiet. Khalid Mustafa was 44, and he was this boy's father. Hamza Mustafa's father. He was also killed. And yeah, they were originally from the war-ravaged Syria, and they had moved to New Zealand from Jordan last year. And their 13-year-old brother, Zaid, was wounded. Junaid Ismail was 36, and he was a Christchurch native who worked at the family business, a dairy, according to New Zealand, or Radio New Zealand, and he had a wife and three children. And his twin brother was also at the shooting, and he survived. Abdul Fattah Qasim was 60, and he was Palestinian. He worked in Kuwait for much of his life. And a relative told the news that he was an elder for the community. And he had three daughters and was about to become a grandfather. Ashraf Ali was originally from Fuji and was 61 and had lived in Christchurch for 17 years. Ashraf Ali Razat was 58 and visiting New Zealand from Fiji when he was killed. Mathula Safi was 55 and came to New Zealand from Afghanistan through India 9 years ago. He was married with 7 children. Hussein Al Umari was 35 and he had recently lost his job, but he worked in the travel industry and he had moved to New Zealand from the United Arab Emirates 22 years ago and was ready to start his life again. Musa Vali Suleiman Patel was 60 and had been an imam in Fiji for 25 years, and he traveled to Australia and then to New Zealand to spend time with children and friends. Ashraf Al-Masri was, they had two children and worked in a shop. His age was not reported. Hussein Mustafa was 70, originally from Egypt, and he loved the mosque. He loved tidying it up. He loved nourishing it and was always welcoming everyone there. He was a welcoming face, his daughter-in-law said. Munir Salaman was 68 and was a design engineer and was a lovely man, according to a spokesman for the company he worked for. Zahran or Zeeshan Raza was 38 and a mechanical engineer and moved to New Zealand last year from Pakistan. Ghulam Hussein was this man's father. He was 66. And they came last month, him and his wife, to visit their son. Karam Bibi was 63. And she and Mr. Hussein are survived by their daughter. So a mom and a dad, and their 38-year-old son were all killed. Abdul Khari Elmi was 78. And he came with his family to New Zealand about 10 years ago. Mohsin Al-Harbi was 63 and lived in New Zealand for 25 years, where he worked in water desalination. After the shooting, his wife was hospitalized with a heart attack while searching for him. Usama Adnan Yusuf Quick was 37, and he was born in Gaza and raised in Egypt, and he was a civil engineer and moved to Christchurch in 2017 and was in the process of applying for a New Zealand citizenship. He had a wife and three children, who were all one of whom was born in Christchurch. Muhammad Haq was 30, moved to New Zealand from Bangladesh, and was studying in Christchurch. Muhammad Omar Farouk was 36 and a welder. Muhammad Abdusi Samad was 66 from Bangladesh and a lecturer. Muse Noor Al-Waili was 77 and lived in Christchurch for 30 years. He was married and had no children. Ahmed Guleyman Abdul Ghani was 68 and immigrated from Egypt with his wife in 1996, wife and son. And his son called him a great man with the purest of hearts. Zakaria Buya was the welder originally from Bangladesh. He had married a woman from his home country and was waiting for a visa so she can join him. And he just celebrated his 33rd birthday at the mosque, because he wanted to take the day off. And I know that was a little long, but I wouldn't feel right if I didn't go through each name. So those are the people that died. They all had lives and a huge history in front of them. And they were taken by a crazy person with a gun. A crazy, hateful person. So
yeah, who didn't believe they should exist.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
That's crazy.
Yeah, sorry that kind of went long. I didn't really realize it.
Doesn't matter. Khaled Beydoun does amazing work. And yeah. The fact that he was able to piece all that information together from like people and their families,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I'll put this article I was reading from. It's from the New York Times. I'm pretty sure they use a lot of Khaled Beydoun's work, and they listed all the victims out. I'll include that along with Khaled Beydoun's Twitter, obviously, because that's where he does most of his work. And the rest of the stuff I read from, as far as the New Zealand Prime Minister is concerned, and just remember the victims and don't even worry about the video that the shooter made or his name or anything. Just don't give him any attention, because that's what he wants.
Yeah, and I believe there was one father who I don't know if he ended up passing, but he was in the hospital under critical care where he like jumped in front. It's like he's the reason the sons are alive, because he jumped in front of them. So crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for listening.
It makes me wonder how any of us would react in a situation like that.
The people that go to a mosque must already be kind of like spiritually centered to the point where like a lot of them have forgiven the shooter. So
yeah, that's a lot of Islam is forgiveness.
Yeah, forgiveness and empathy and being kind to one another and peace.
Yeah,
that's what it's about.
Like finding internal peace.
Yeah,
and I've said this before, but like my mom is always like, in my mind, the perfect example of the ultimate Muslim woman, because she never, you would never know she's Muslim because she doesn't outwardly be like, I'm Muslim and you need to respect that. Like, she keeps it to herself.
Mm-hmm.
She practices in her own way and she never really judges anyone. She doesn't ever, like, she's always very pleasant and she never blames anyone for anything. And she knows. I don't know, it's very interesting to me how she lives her life. Like, she's pretty self-actualized in a way.
Yeah. But that's what religion should be. It should be something personal. And something that you keep, that you, I don't know. Do you want to take a quick commercial break and then you can start talking about you?
Yeah.
Well, not about me.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
And we are back. Just getting comfortable. So for my section, I'm going to talk about kind of the rise of ISIS and where it is now. So at its peak in January 2015, they call it ISIL. In the research I did, everyone calls it ISIL, but you know me, I love me some ISIS. So at its peak in January 2015, ISIL covered an area across Syria and Iraq roughly equivalent to the size of the UK. And they attracted about 40,000 foreign fighters to its cause. And if you don't know who ISIL slash ISIS is today, they are a terrorist organization based out of the Middle East. And they prey on insurgents to fight for their cause. So by March this year, the armed group has lost nearly 100% of its land, according to the conflict monitor by IHS Markit, which is a security and defense observer. And today, only a handful of its fighters battle on in Baghouz, which is a town in Syria's Deir ez-Zor province that represents its final holdout, and which is currently under assault by U.S.-backed Kurdish-led forces. So the fall of Baghouz is probably not going to be the end of ISIL, because they're like a force in the region. That's what analysts say. And according to Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, the hit-and-run attacks executed by ISIL sleeper cells are going to continue to happen in both Iraq, Syria, and wherever else they decide to attack. Landis says, ISIL is far from being destroyed as a terrorist organization. So to give you some history, ISIL began as an offshoot of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which in 2006 became known as the Islamic State of Iraq, ISI. The movement was led by key al-Qaeda figures, which played a major role in driving the kind of sectarian conflict that followed the U.S. invasion in 2003, which, if you remember, that was old, you know, that whole situation, which I've talked about on this show, about George W.? No. H.W. Bush. Sometimes I always forget which one is which.
Their names are very similar.
Yeah, George H.W. Bush, who was our most recent Bush president.
No, just W was recent.
Wait, George A. Oh, you're right. George W. Bush. Sorry, I can never remember. Like, I was reading about it earlier and I kept getting confused which one they were talking about. George W. Bush, the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
H.W. is the old crabby one, which is why 9/11 happened. George H. is the one was to why ISIS exists.
Yes.
So ISIS carried out deadly, or IC, ISI, they carried out deadly attacks in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad during this period, during like 2003-ish. They targeted Western allied tribal leaders and U.S. Army posts before they were eventually pushed out. So they were like undeterred. They were like, well, shit. So they took over Mosul, which is Iraq's second largest city, and they used that as a hub to continue its attacks. So in 2010, the group's current leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, they call him Baghdadi, but I don't know. I instinctively want to call him Baghdadi. So he was the ISI chief, and then 2 years later, he mandated ISI affiliates to set up an offshoot in Syria, which was a country, you know, that was in its own civil war. And so members of that offshoot, first known as Jabhat al-Nusra, were then integrated into ISIL after a number of defections. So ISIL, ISIS, that is the group that became out of Jabhat al-Nusra. So ISIL, they quickly began to establish its presence over like the drained, vulnerable, war-torn areas of Syria and Iraq, and they made it easy for the group to gain, you know, influence and military power in the region. So meanwhile, in Raqqa, ISIL was working on weakening the Free Syrian Army, the FSA, which were the forces that opposed anyone, or like the forces that were loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. And eventually, ISIL, they were able to eject the two largest Free Syrian Army factions at the start of 2014. Mustafa Sagher, who is a former FSA fighter who lived under ISIL rule, he told Al Jazeera that ISIL creeped up on us. They worked in secret and relied on spies to weaken the FSA, who were busy fighting the regime. And he's 27 years old, and he remained in Raqqa until the summer of 2015. So ISIL, they began asserting their power aggressively, according to Sagher, who had discreetly surrendered to the group following the FSA's removal. So Sagher says that he started to very quickly feel like a stranger in Raqqa, because most of the ISIL fighters, they were all foreigners. They're mostly European, Chechens, North Africans, and they would like flood the streets, and they would basically cover up all signs of the Syrian revolution. They like painted over and erased literal signs on the walls. So ISIL basically promised to its supporters this like self-proclaimed caliphate. And if you don't know what that is, a caliphate is like an Islamic state under a leadership of an Islamic steward with the title of caliph, which is a person considered a religious successor to the Islamic prophet Muhammad and a leader to the entire group of people. So they promised this sort of like utopia to their supporters. And at this exact same time, there were like serious human rights violations going on by Bashar al-Assad's government, and the FSA factions were slowly starting to fall apart. So Sagher says that some chose to support the group in its early stages because they were seeking justice and freedom from the war and because of Assad's, and this is what he says, shackles. So in addition to political exclusion and rights abuses, there was poor economic conditions and there was unemployment, and that all helped, you know, contribute to the rise of ISIL. And this is why ISIL has been a great success as a protest movement, according to Landis, the professor I quoted earlier. He said, it has been able to mobilize hundreds of thousands, win the sympathies of even more, and become a movement that is feared the world over. So over the years, several armed groups outside the Middle East, including parts of Africa and Southeast Asia, have pledged allegiance to ISIL. They basically claim attacks on both civilians and security personnel. In 2016, the United Nations revealed that at least 34 groups from around the world had pledged allegiance to the so-called ISIL caliphate. So individual attacks have also taken place in the name of ISIL, including incidents, you know, of mass shootings in the United States and Europe. So in this whole turbulent war, ISIL's attempts to create its own society has kind of been unsuccessful. According to Besma Momani, who's a professor of political science at the University of Waterloo, they, ISIL supporters, thought they were getting a clean, non-corrupt entity to replace the central government. But they soon learned that this was a medieval-style organization that ruled by way of fear. This was no liberation. It was not a utopia. So some of their famous tactics left many with no option but to conform as a means of escaping harassment, arrest, and death. So men were prohibited from shaving off their facial hair, and the ISIL religious police, the Hizbah, force women to cover their faces. So one man who is going by, you know, a fake name, he's going by Samer, he says the Hizbah would especially harass women if they weren't wearing the right clothing. And he wrote the Raqqa Diaries, which is a firsthand account depicting his own experiences living under ISIL. He goes on to talk about how life under the group also meant limited contact with the outside world. Internet cafes were monitored, television sets were banned, and owning a mobile phone suggested conspiring with foreign agents. It was as if all the walls had ears. So he recalls being like in absolute shock because he saw his friend's headless corpse strung up above Raqqa's main square. It's this memory from a hot summer day in 2015 that defines his time living under ISIS rule in Syria. He said no one was allowed to touch it nor bring it down for a proper burial. And his friend was an English literature graduate in his mid-20s who was killed for his activism. I can't describe what I saw simply because there are no words to describe it. I fainted in the middle of the crowd and was immediately taken away. So public executions were a pretty regular occurrence in ISIL's former self-proclaimed capital, which was a brutal tactic aimed at silencing dissent and, of course, striking fear within the people. And as the situation deteriorated, both Sager and Samer felt compelled to do something. According to Samer, we had to wake people up and show them that this was not right. This is not Islam. And Samer fled to Turkey in 2017 because he had to get out. So he wrote witness accounts, and Sager, the other man I was talking about, he managed to smuggle a small button-sized camera lens into Raqqa to secretly document daily life under ISIL rule. And some of the footage he captured, which included public executions, was later used in international media reports. The two men recall how the group's targets had always been helpless civilians. According to Samer, whenever they felt like they were about to lose territory, they'd tighten their grip and project onto civilians. Yeah. So this was the case when a U.S.-led coalition began battling ISIL in Iraq and Syria only months after Baghdadi declared the establishment of the self-proclaimed cross-border caliphate in Mosul in 2014, the group was being targeted by coalition airstrikes. So it continued to spread further into Kurdish-controlled territory in northern Iraq, where they enslaved minorities, including members of the Yazidi community. So there was a bunch of aerial bombardment coupled with ground incursions by coalition allies, which eventually led to demise of ISIL in as its self-proclaimed caliphate. But it came at a huge cost. Because according to Airways, which is a UK-based group tracking allegations of civilian casualties, coalition air raids amounted to at least 6,000 civilian deaths in Iraq and Syria because of the fighting in densely populated urban areas.
Wow.
So the monitoring group told Al Jazeera, where I got most of my research for this, the total number of coalition air and artillery strikes between August 8, 2014 and February 23, 2019 amounted to 33,961 attacks.
Wow.
So most of those raids were in Syria, largely because they had captured Raqqa. So despite being on the brink of, you know, military defeat, analysts say that ISIL's ideology will live on. Kolam Strack, who's a senior Middle East analyst at IHS Marquette, says that ISIL is already reorganizing to establish safe havens in near accessible areas in Iraq's Sunni heartland by rebuilding networks of support in surrounding sympathetic Sunni Arab communities. So this will likely be the case in neighboring Syria as well, where the U.S. is planning to withdraw its troops from the country's northeastern region. And analysts, they believe that a return of foreign ISIL fighters to their home countries is key to the prevention of future resurgence. So hundreds who have surrendered to the Kurdish-led SDF in Baghouz over the last few weeks are foreign fighters. And that's according to a spokesperson for the Kurdish militia who told this to Al Jazeera. So they really want to send these citizens back to their original countries who had left to fight for ISIS. So last month, Trump demanded his European allies take back over 800 ISIS fighters we captured in Syria and put them all on trial, which was rejected by most European countries like France and the UK. I just, you know, with everything going on, like all these people, they're kind of, everyone is who lived in these places is currently stuck in exile. You can't really go back. There's air raids going on. It's just not safe. And Samer says ISIL's takeover was a stab in the back. And through his diaries, he wanted to show the world that ISIL and Assad's governments are two sides of the same coin. He says, when Assad's forces were pushed out, we lived in a golden era. The feeling of freedom was indescribable. It's what I miss most. So it's unclear what ISIL's next plan is. I mean, I think they just have a stronghold in the weak areas of Syria. And you know, of course, Bashar al-Assad is not helping the situation because he's putting his citizens in a pretty horrible situation where they can't escape, whether it's his regime or this terrorist organization who's trying to create its own, you know, caliphate. Yeah. And there's really nothing, you know, they themselves as people can do, because you can stand up as far as you want, but then there's always this group that's trying to kill you for dissent. Like, it's just, it's a bit of a situation, and I don't understand what's going to happen if Trump pulls out American forces, because a lot of them are backing the Kurdish forces who are doing a lot of work to try and free people and capture ISIS fighters and return them back to their originating countries, which I think is important to get them out of there. Get them out of there and make them understand that what they're doing is not okay. Get them back to their original countries. I don't know what will happen after that. I don't know. I mean, we had an issue where a woman was like, let me back in America, and they were telling her no. Her name escapes me. It's the most recent story that came out. And it's like, accept your people, let them back in, and help them figure it the fuck out, because they just went to fight for a terrorist organization, and we don't want them to feel like an insurgent even more and feel like they need to go back to fight. Just get your people back and figure it out. It's a bad situation. We're not here to keep telling people that they are not wanted. They cannot come back to this country because, they've done something very evil. They went to fight for a terrorist organization. But a lot of these people, they don't know what they're doing. They're stuck in this world where no one wants them and they don't understand anything. And that's what leads them to these groups.
Yeah.
They're feeling shut down and they don't understand. And they want this utopia that clearly is not going to happen. And, you know, that's why they...
Desperation is the reason for so many things.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a really bad situation when it comes to people who have fought for ISIS and now are, like, lost.
Yeah.
Because, like, where does one go after that? Yeah. So, I guess we'll find out more. Hopefully they won't grow. Hopefully
I'd like to believe that they're on their way out, but you never know these things.
I mean, I feel like right now their best options are to attack in, like, small, not small, but, like, terrorist attacks that are, like, strike and get out versus trying to maintain an entire stronghold of a town like they had with, you know, Raqqa or Mosul. It's, I don't know. It's a very fucked up situation. There's, like, just evil. It's just pure evil.
Yeah. And it's not Islam, which is very important to remember. It's... I hate that it has the word Islamic in its name, because it's the opposite of what that religion is.
Yeah, because that's not a true caliphate, what they were trying to create.
No.
That was just murder and evil and death.
No.
And a lack of understanding of Islam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll post the article from Al Jazeera and more. There's a lot of great documentary footage that I watched that was depressing as shit. And if you really, really want to know more, like, go listen to that podcast, Caliphate. Like, that shit actually fucked me up. I low-key wish I didn't listen to it, because I, like, had, like, kind of nightmares, and it was little, like, it's very real. It's very graphic, and you really hear about these, what happened to these fucking people. Just like that man Samar was saying, his fucking friend was hanging with no head above a city that he at one point called home. So, it's,
That's fucking...
I'll put the link in our bio. It's very heavy, and only listen if you really truly want to know some certain history or understand what's going on there. But if you're weak of heart and don't think you can handle it, don't listen to it, because it's heavy.
Fuck.
Yeah. That's the way it goes. This is the world we live in.
Yeah. It's
great times. You guys enjoyed that show?
This world is so ugly sometimes. But on the flip side, there sometimes the good people in the world show themselves, whether it's like in New Zealand with or the outpouring of support that's been happening or otherwise, and I don't know. That was a pretty heady episode and heavy episode, but I hope you guys can appreciate that we're talking about it and it needs to be talked about. Do you want to wrap it up? Should I wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay, you can find us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, on Instagram, ethnicallyambig. You can email us at ethnicallyambig@gmail.com. Our website is ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. Look at the description and the footnotes of this episode for all the links we talked about. Go to TeePublic. The link is in our Twitter bio, and it's also just teepublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. You can buy some merch. There's always a sale going on, it seems like, at TeePublic, so there are shirts that are like $14 or like whatever, and it's just a really good deal. And so if you want to support us, get some merch and rock it out. There's shirts and mugs and totes and everything. And also, a big way to support us is to write a 5-star review on iTunes or your podcast app, or even on Facebook if you don't have either of those. So like us on Facebook and write us a nice thing, and we might read it out loud. And you can find me at ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
You can find me at Anna Hosnier, the devil.
Okay.
Okay.
Should we leave?
Yeah, you want to bite that ass?
I'll bite that ass.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.